comics, comedians, and humor, the role of Jews and the impact of Judaism on entertainment, part one, the origins of humor in classic Jewish texts. Now I ask you, if you think of Judaism as a religion, I mean, you know, in its classic sense, as a funny and happy-go-lucky religion, is that the sense that you would normally get? That seems kind of strict, confining, restricting. Some of the things you think about, oh, the rules, you know, Shabbos. You know, there are rules which confine us. But despite the rules that we have, and there's a lot of capital punishment going on for different things which we could possibly do or not fulfill. So what I want to start with is just a sentiment which I found in a couple of places, and that is the idea that Judaism really wants us to enjoy life. Not just to enjoy life, but I mean to really enjoy, because it's not about feeling repressed, it's not about feeling negative, it's not about feeling, oh, I didn't do what I'm supposed to do. It's about saying, yeah, I'm supposed to do things, but when I'm not doing those things, what am I doing? Am I sitting all day and, you know, clapping my chest, assuming that I've done something wrong? Or am I drinking? Now, you can drink. That's fine. Of course, drinking has to have limits. But you know, one of the most famous sentences, which is probably popular because of a song, is this, which comes from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. And I have a Rabbi Nachman of Breslov joke. I should probably just tell it now. It's not really a joke about him. It's really more, well, you'll see in a second. So before we read it, so there's a midrash that states that at the bottom of Mount Sinai, the Jewish people were looking up at the mountain, and they saw the image of Moses dead on the top of the mountain. Okay, and subsequently they proceeded to worship the golden calf in whatever way that they did. Everything okay there? Okay. Well, let's leave these by the door. So, okay. So they're standing at the bottom of the mountain. That's the midrash. But the rest of the story goes that there were actually three chassidim at the bottom of the mountain. There was a Lubavitcher chassid, a Breslover chassid, and a Satmar chassid. And the Lubavitcher chassid looks up and says, "He's not dead." Okay? The Breslover chassid says, "He may be dead, but he can still lead us." You get the reference? And the Satmar chassid looks up and says, "He's not late." Yeah, okay. In any case, let's take a look at what Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says. He says, "Mitzvah gedol aliyos b'simcha tamid." It is a tremendous mitzvah. It is a big mitzvah, a commandment to be joyous always. Ulizkaber la'achika atzavus ve'amara shechora b'chol kolcho, and to overcome sadness with all of one's strength. Ki teva adam l'mshoch atzmo l'amara shechora v'atzavus machmas pigei u'mikrei hazman, because it is a human nature to be sad and to be depressed over things that happen. Life is full of challenges. Therefore, a person must force himself with tremendous efforts to be happy always and to bring about personal happiness in whatever way possible. And take a look at the last three words. V'afilu b'milei d'shtusa. Even through silly words or conversations. This is Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. He says, if you need to have a silly conversation, literally, to talk about stupid things. What's stupid things? Jokes. Jokes are stupid things. Then that's what you do. If that's what helps you achieve joy, if that's what helps you achieve happiness, then you do it. You have it from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Let's go earlier than Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. The Torah. Okay, and the commentary is not earlier than Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. The commentary is the Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the last Rosh Yeshiva, head of the Yeshiva of Volozhin in the 1890s. So he says on the verse in the book of Devarim, the book of Deuteronomy, which is shortly after the Ten Commandments are repeated. Okay, Moshe is told by God, "Lechem olahem, shuvu lachem leolechem." You go tell the people to go return to their tents. Ve'ata po amori madi, and you, Moshe, you stay with me because I'm going to teach you the rest of the Torah, and you're going to in turn teach it to the Jewish people all in good time. Now, what does that mean? Moshe is supposed to stand on top of the mountain, and the Jewish people are supposed to go down back to their tents. What are they supposed to do when they're back in their tents? Sit and stare at the cowhide? What are they supposed to do? There's no television. They don't even have a radio. What are they supposed to do? Books. What books? Gutenberg wasn't around yet. You know, what are they supposed to do? So the Netziv says, Shuvu lechem le'olechem. We're in the second box, in number one. He says, L'chayei b'sarim v'tanugot b'nei adam k'teva hanushi. Go back to your tents, to your physical lives and human pleasures as is human nature. Go enjoy life. Don't sit there waiting for things to happen and feel negative about yourself or feel negative about, but Moshe, you have to tell me what I need to do. You have to tell me, am I allowed to do it? Am I allowed to take these two steps? Am I allowed to turn on my oven? Am I allowed to do it? No, go enjoy life. If somebody comes and tells you you're not supposed to do that or whatever, fine. But our job on this earth is to enjoy life. Last idea. Okay, there's a passage in the Talmud Avodah Zarah. Gemara Avodah Zarah says the following. Okay, I don't want to go into all the details leading up to it, but the Gemara asks the question. Ini, is it true that God only laughs on one day of the year? Okay, the Gemara built up to what that day of the year is and why. V'ha'am Rabbi Yehuda Marav, but Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he says, Shtei Mesrei Sha'ot Have Hayom, there are 12 hours in the day. Shalosh Rishonar Kadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Osek B'Torah, 3 hours of the day, God, so to speak. Now, this is a metaphor, obviously, whatever it means that God is doing these things. But 3 hours of the day, God sits and involves himself with Torah. Shniyot, the second 3 hours of the day, Yoshev Adana Kol Olam Kulo, he sits and he judges the world. Kevan Sharah Shenitchayev Olam Kulya Omeid Mikisei Adin V'Yoshev Akisei Rachamim. Okay, when he sees that the world needs a different kind of judgment, he goes from the, I didn't put this translation, but he goes from the chair of judgment and he goes on to the chair of mercy and he gives mercy to the world. Shlishiyot, for the third quarter of the day, Yoshev Zanakol Olam Kulo, Mikanei Re'emim Abeit Seichinim, God sits and he provides for the world from the horns of the Re'em, which is a big beautiful animal, to the eggs of lice, which are the tiniest, and God provides. That's what he does. So we have so far three separate 3 hour periods. Revi'iyot, the fourth 3 hour section, Yoshev Umisachek Im Leviathan. God sits and he fools around with the Leviathan. Now, what's the Leviathan? The Leviathan is this huge animal figure, perhaps a legendary figure. But there are texts which indicate that God created Leviathan. It's in the Torah. Okay, that God created Leviathan. And so, what it means is that God is basically he's fooling around. That's what God is doing during this time period. And what's the proof? Shenamar, as the verse in Tehillim in Psalm says, Leviathan zeh yasarta l'tzachik bo, you created this Leviathan to sport with it. What's God doing? God is saying, part of my day, every day, is to have a good time. Now, we don't have a Leviathan to play with, okay? And it's really a metaphor for how we're supposed to divide our day. But we don't have a Leviathan to play with, but we have ways in which we're meant to entertain ourselves. And if God is going to take his time out, so to speak, to play with the Leviathan, then it's a message for us that we should spend a portion of our day, In the words of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, entertaining ourselves, being happy, doing things that can help us feel good about our existence on this earth.
And you sleep in the
day. Well, this is the daytime. Then you have the nighttime. We haven't talked about what you do during the nighttime. That's the topic of a different shiur. Okay. Now, we're not going to go into this so much this time. There are six classes in this series, and in the next few classes, we're going to talk about comedians, specific comedians, especially in the 20s, 30s, 40s. We'll talk about people of those times. We're also going to spend 1 week talking about comics, and by comics, I mean comic books, not comic as in something similar to a comedian. We'll talk about the difference between a human comic and a human comedian. Okay, we're going to talk 1 week about comic books, and then we'll spend a couple of weeks talking about humor and how humor has developed over time, especially in the way Jews developed humor as a specific response to the societies in which they lived. Okay? There is much evidence to indicate that much of Jewish humor and the accomplishments of Jews in the field of entertainment was a backlash to persecution and discrimination. This is certainly true in Russia, and in Nazi Germany, and it was most likely true in other times in the history of the world as well. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, by the way, was famously asked, are there any jokes in the Talmud? And he said, yes, but they're all old. So we're not going to, we'll find a couple of them today, but we're not going to go through a lot of them because we probably wouldn't understand them anyway. But take a look at this one idea that Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch says in source number 2. Okay, this is when the Jewish people are being chased by the Egyptians on their way, right before the splitting of the sea. The people turn to Moses, to Moshe, and they say to him, "Vayomru al Moshe, hamibliin kvarim b'mitzrayim l'kachtanu l'amuz b'midbar. Could it be there aren't any graves in Egypt that you took us to die in the desert? Ma'azaz asisa lanu l'tzianu b'mitzrayim. What does this say you did to take us out of Egypt?" Now, I mean, be honest. Take a look at that and think of the dramatic reading that you can apply to that. What are they saying? They're saying, Moses, come on, man. Is this the reason why you took us out? Hello? Do something. You're the miracle man. You know, use your stick. Wave your wand. Go ahead and do something. What's going on, Mo? You got these Egyptians chasing after us? Do your magic. Come on. Did you ever think of it that way before? Or did you just think these people were a bunch of complainers? So look at what Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says. He says, could it be there aren't any graves in Egypt? Meaning, was there a shortage of graves? This is a singular example of irony in the Torah. Even in the most despairing moment of fear that there is no God watching over, Jews display an innate sense of humor, which is a characteristic quality of the tribe of Jacob, those blessed with a quantitative intelligence. Now, I translated that from the Hebrew, so it may mean qualitative intelligence. I'm not sure what he meant. But in either case, it doesn't really matter. The point that he's making is that even in a moment of ultimate despair, the Jewish people are being funny. That's what we do. That's how we respond. I mean, it's not my place to talk about concentration camp humor, but it existed. That's what people do. There's a story told that in Nazi Germany, there's a Jew walking down the street, and a Nazi, stops him, or as he's passing by, the Nazi says, "Swine!" And the Jew says, "Goldberg," and he keeps walking. There's another joke which is told about how there are these two Jews who decide that they're going to kill Hitler. Okay, and they figured out that every single day at 12 o'clock, his car passes by a certain curve, and they have a gun ready, and they're going to kill him. And they come one day at 12 o'clock, and his car doesn't go past there. And it's 12:05, and it's 12:10, and it's 12:15. And they're getting nervous, and one of them turns to the other and says, "Oh my goodness, I hope nothing happened to him." I mean, you can't make this stuff up, but people who are living at the time make these things up. So that leads us to our next question, which is, what is the role that humor should play? When we think of comedians, or we think of people who make us laugh, what picture do we create in our minds? Hopefully someone who in a pleasant and appropriate way knows how to tug at our heartstrings and make us laugh in a wholesome way. So whenever people talk about this discussion, the next source is the one which is brought up, and that's the Gemara in Masechet Tainis, the Talmudic passage in the book of Tanit, which is the following. Okay, we'll take a look at it on the English side. Rabbi Broka of Bechaza used to frequent the marketplace of Beit Lefet. Elijah the prophet would appear to him. Rabbi Broka asked him, "Is there anyone here who is destined for the world to come?" Okay, and he mentions a few people over a series of back and forth, which we're not going to go into because they're not relevant to our case. So we have a dot, dot, dot to indicate that there's more on the page, but here we go. He said to him, after a couple of days, "These two are destined for the world to come." Two guys, which he points out. So Rabbi Broka went over to them, and he said to them, "What do you do?" And they said to him, "We are comedians." If you look on the Hebrew side, it's the third to last line, meaning the last line having the one word. He says, "Inshe baduche anan." We are comedians. And we go to cheer up those who are depressed. Additionally, whenever we see two people involved in a quarrel, we strive hard to make peace between them. So how does that merit them a place in the world to come? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi, the classic commentary. This is not a joke, but it's kind of funny. Just for those who want to know when Rashi lived, I like this method of remembering it. It makes it very easy. Rashi lived for 65 years. He was 65 years old when he died. He lived from the year 1040 to 1105, which means he lived through the First Crusade. And the way we remember that is we say, he accomplished a lot in 25 minutes. Think about it. 1040, 1105. Okay, now you remember. So Rashi says, "Anshei baduchei anan." We are comedians, which means smechim u'mesamchim b'nei adam. We are joyous and we bring joy to others. This is a good. Remember, everybody, this is a key to getting into the world to come. Tarchinan. What does it mean? Tarchinan. That we strive. We strive by telling people jokes. B'milei d'beducha d'beduchusa. Rather, b'nayhu. We tell jokes between the people who are quarreling with one another, and that's how we achieve the peace. And we do this until peace is achieved. He said, Rashi says, "Shein dvarim she'adam ochel peretem b'lamazev akaren kayemet l'olam haba." What's one of the things? This is one of the ways that people who eat the fruits of their labors in this world and have a living fund, so to speak, for the world to come. What is it? Hava shalom bein adam l'chaveiro. If you make peace between fellow human beings, that is a way of achieving the world to come, and that's what these people did. So we have here the Gemara telling us that humor is an important ingredient, and it's a key method, really, to get into the world to come. And if a Jewish life is meant to do the best we can in this world in order to achieve the world to come, that's our tradition, that's what we believe, what a fantastic way to go about doing it. Tell jokes. So now you're going to go home afterwards, you're going to buy all the clean joke books you can find, and the rest of your days, when you have spare time, the only thing you have to work on is your delivery. That's it. Okay. And I have that same problem, by the way. There's in the big book of Jewish humor, they have a section which we may talk about in a couple weeks called "There's More Than One Way to Kill a Joke." It's very funny, and that you can't kill if you just read it, but it's very funny. Alright, so let us go and take a look back at the humor that is evident in the Bible, and it really goes back to the first human beings. Yeah, we talked about human beings. Who makes comedy if not human beings? But the truth is that the first joke in the Torah is actually made by God. Now, Bill Cosby has a fantastic routine about the story of Adam and Eve in the Bible. He talks about how he calls it brain damage. He talks about how, and it's really an excellent commentary, by the way. You know, you think about it. I think he's a Methodist by birth and by upbringing. But his commentary on this story is really, I mean, it's funny, obviously, but it's also really good. And he says that Adam and Eve are in the garden, and they had nothing to do, ladies and gentlemen. They had nothing to do. And so Adam was walking around with nothing to do. And then God says to them, for the first time, he says, "Don't." Don't what? Don't eat from the forbidden fruit. Now, he calls this brain damage because he talks about how when you're raising children, you say to them, "Do this, do this, do this, don't do this." And the example that he gives is, "Don't drink from my cup of Coke." And you turn around and your child drinks from your cup of Coke. And you say, "Didn't I tell you not to drink from my cup of Coke?" And the child says, "Yes." And I said, "If I told you not to drink it and you knew you weren't supposed to drink it, then why did you drink it?" And the child says, "I don't know." And that's brain damage. And he says, it's the exact same thing here. And that's why we have this story. And I'm not making this up. Take a look at it. God called to the man and he said to him, In the Hebrew, Vayomer lo ayeka. Yoo-hoo! Adam, where are you? But we all know what he did. What does he do? He says, "Oh." You know, he's running off, he's hiding, you know, he realizes that he's naked, and he tries to hide. I mean, this is like straight out of a vaudeville routine. Vayomer, God says to him, Adam says, "Kol chashamati bagan va'ira ki yirom anachi ve'yichave." I heard your voice, so I decided to hide because I was afraid, and so that's what I did, because I saw that I was naked. God says to him, "Vayomer, mihi gilecha ki yirom ata." Oh, whoa. How did that happen? Wool taken off the eyes, what's going on here? Hamina eitz asher siviticha l'bilti achol mimena acholta. Did you eat from that? You know, there was a tree we talked about. Did you? No. You didn't. You know, I mean, God doesn't know. God, of course God knows. He's playing with him. God, did you eat from that tree? And what does Adam say? What does Adam say? Me? She did it. Right? She did it. It wasn't me. It was her. It was my sister. She did it. In my house, I get this all the time. Something up here breaks, which means that one of the children who knows how to throw a ball threw it. Okay, who did it? The baby. What? Where do you get that from? That this is funny. Okay, so God says to her, what did you do? And she says, it wasn't me. It was a snake. This is hilarious. It really is. You know, and they think they're going to get away with it. We all know they don't get away with it. And that's when the Torah starts to get a little depressing because of the repercussions which come from that. But that's the first joke. We have a few more jokes in the Torah. Vayihi, Abraham and Sarah, they've just come into the land. They've been given this mission. You're going to go to this place I'm going to show you. They get to the place, and what do you know? There's no food. So what do they have? They have to go down to Egypt. So they go down to Egypt, and on their way, Abraham, who's been married for, we don't know how long, but he's been married for a little while, but certainly he's been married for, this is not his honeymoon. Okay? He turns to his wife, Vayihi kasher hikrivu lo Mitzrayim, we're in source number 5, the first box. Vayomer el Sarai ishto, as they're coming close to Egypt, he says to Sarai ishto, to his Sarai his wife, hinei na yadati ki isha yifat mare'at. Okay? Now I know that you're beautiful. Now there are many ways that we can read that. You know, he could be saying, oh God, there's dirt in my eye, man. Whoa, I've never opened my eyes up until now. But what's he thinking? We know what he's thinking. He's thinking, when we get to Egypt, these guys are going to kill me. So what does he say? He says, where have I been? Honey, I need you to save my hide. Because if you don't play this game, play along with me, they're going to kill me. Darling. Now you could just put on your Eastern European accent for this. Darling, I need you right now. I really need you to do me a favor. You're so beautiful. You're so gorgeous. What is he? I mean, he can't be serious. What, I just realized now? Now, obviously there are many interpretations, and I'm not going down. I'm using this for my benefit right now. But the point is, he can't be for real. Where has he been all this time? He's been married for a long time. His wife is only getting older. She's not getting younger. And that's not a knock on Sarai, who's considered one of the most beautiful women. But the fact of the matter is, you know, whatever. What's this realization all of a sudden? He's playing with her. Continue. And we see that they have a sense of humor. It's clear that they have a sense of humor. When Avram is told he's going to have a child, by next box, don't call her Sarai anymore, your wife. Her name is Sarah. And I'm blessing her, and I'm also going to give you a son through her. And I'll bless her. She will be a mother of nations. Kings will come out of her. Avraham falls down, and he's laughing. Vayomer Billy Bow, and he says in his heart, Halaven Meyashana Yivaleid. Come on. Can a 100-year-old man father a child? V'im Sarah. And what about Sarah? Remember that old, now I know you're beautiful line? That was a plot. That was a ploy. What about Sarah? Come on, are you kidding? 90 years old? Not happening. You gotta be kidding, God. And then, and Sarah, she has the same reaction. Next box. Avram's 100 years old, sure enough, when the child is born. V'tomer Sarah says, Tzchok asali Elohim kol shemei yitzchak ali. God has made a joke with me. Everyone who hears is going to laugh. Li. Now, Li could mean either to me, about me, for me. I'm going to show you two interpretations. But, I mean, hello? The name of their child is laughter. That this whole thing is a joke. They think it's a joke until they turn around and they say, wait a second, this is a kid. We don't know how to take care of a kid. Alright, well, it's not really a joke anymore, but it was a joke. They didn't, you know, perhaps they didn't get it. Or, I mean, they appreciate it. Of course they appreciate it. Maybe they did get it. But they're obviously laughing. I'm not, you know, there's no twisting of the text here. Alright, so what's their humor all about? Rashi says, Rashi will look at the English. Rashi will laugh for me. Means everyone who hears this will laugh for me. They'll be happy for me. And the Midrash suggests even that many barren women were healed. Many prayers were answered, and there was much joy in the world over this. In other words, this was the watershed for many people who were going through a similar type of experience, etc. And that's very nice. That's a wonderful teaching. It's a wonderful thought to have. Rashbam says that the laughter was not a laughter as in, this is a joke and I can't handle it. But it's a joke of wonderment. It's a joy of wonderment and a surprise. I had a baby? Oh my goodness! But again, the laughter is meant to bring out the joy of the situation and the joy of the occasion so that we can see that these are real people, that these are human beings who understand joy and who can appreciate, in some cases, a good joke. I mean, they're both making fun of each other. Avram says, my 90-year-old wife, come on. And later on, she says, you know, my 100-year-old, oh, come on, this is not, you know, she laughs also in the tent, which I didn't bring here, but Yitzchak Sarah B'kirba Le'mor, when Sarah laughs and says, oh yeah, I'm going to have a baby and my husband, who's even older than I am, come on. They're laughing at each other. That's, hopefully, people, we should all live and be well for a long time, and those of us who merit to live with our spouses for a long time can laugh for a very long time together. Which reminds me, by the way, of a story. I think I heard this one from Rabbi Ralph Pelkowitz. Rabbi Ralph Pelkowitz told this story at the 50th anniversary of his presence at the White Shul in Far Rockaway. He's a rabbi in Far Rockaway for many years. He's retired now, but I heard the story from him last year, where he said that at the 50th anniversary, he told the following tale. He said there was a 50th wedding anniversary when somebody came over to the husband and said, you know, you've been married 50 years. Have you ever, just be honest, have you ever thought about getting a divorce? And the husband said, ah, chutzpah. Here I am at my 50th wedding anniversary and you're asking me, next to my beautiful wife of 50 years, and you're asking me if I ever thought about divorce. Ah, chutzpah. Divorce. Murder, yes, but not divorce. And Rabbi Pelkowitz told that to his congregants. You know, you can imagine. It's a classic Rabbi Pelkowitz. Okay. So let's get a joke in here. We may as well, since we haven't had enough of that. And that is the classic joke, which is, who was the first star actor in the Bible? So, I would belabor the point if I read you this whole thing, but you can read it. You can read the story of Samson. And the story of Samson is that he's the first star actor in the Bible because he, ready for the drum roll please? He brought the house down. Okay, so it's there. You can read it for yourself in source number 6. We could spend the time, but why should we do that? Okay. So, we were talking about the history of jokes. History of jokes in the Talmud, and that is starting with number 7, telling jokes. So there are two passages in the Talmud which say the same idea, and this one, I think the one that I gave is the one from Shabbat. The version in Psachim is slightly changed, but it doesn't really change the meaning. But in any case, what it says is, Ki ha de rabba, nekame de patach l'rabbanan, before Rabba would begin teaching the rabbis, Amar Milta de Bedichuta, he would tell a joke, Ubarche Rabbanan, and the rabbis would laugh. I assume that he was a good joke teller and that he didn't kill jokes before he told them. Lesof Yatid Be'imata Ufatach B'Shemaita. Afterwards, he would sit in trepidation and begin his teachings. Why would he tell a joke? So the Akut Shimoni explains in the next box. Amalul Rabbanan Milta de Bedichuta, he would say to the rabbis a joke, Kihechi de Liftach Libayu, in order to open or stimulate their hearts to be receptive to learning. Sometimes learning is not easy. Sometimes learning is extremely challenging. Sometimes learning is difficult. And a person needs to feel comfortable in the environment in order to say, alright, I'm gonna take this on, I'm gonna work with it, I'm gonna face the challenge. So he would tell a joke in order to ease the tension in the room. And sometimes a joke does that. I'm a mohel, and sometimes before a bris, I will say to the father of the baby, because the truth is that it's the father's commandment to do the bris. I'll say to the father, you know, it's really your commandment to do the bris, but you've hired me to do the bris, so I'm going to do it. But in some cases, I'll say, no, I remember one time I had this guy, his name was Harris. And I said, Harris, we are about to do the bris now, and it's really your commandment to do the bris. Harris, would you like to do the bris? and his wife in the other side of the room says, "No way!" And you get the idea. But it's just to ease the tension. Obviously, he didn't want to do it, and he said, "You know, I've had you know, wives slash mothers of the baby say, 'Over my dead body.'" And the husband will banter back, "That can be arranged, you know, stuff like that." But we try to end that right over there. But of course, that leads us to the next idea, and that is the idea of bantering. A lot of humor is the give and take. You know, Joey mentioned before Abbott and Costello. We're not really going to talk about Abbott and Costello because they're not Jewish, but much of what they did was banter between one another. A lot of malapropisms, which is also employed by Amos and Andy, also not Jewish, so we're not going to talk about them. But it's all about banter. And we have a few examples here of situations where there was bantering going on between two sides, some cases in good fun and good humor, and some cases really, you know, almost biting, and you get the feeling that this turns out to be a comedy routine, but that's only because it's so real. I mean, the best comedy is the real deal. So take a look at the first source here. Okay, the background of this is that Ravina asked Rava two questions. Okay, and the first one Rava answered, and then Ravina asked a second question. Have kamehadule bidichusa, and Rava's response to him was the amarle. He said to him, "Ana shanai chada, va'at shani chada. I already answered one. Thank you very much." You know, he's asking tough questions. "I already answered one. Why don't you answer one for a change?" Okay, now obviously they were friends. Obviously they're having a discussion, and the point was, leave me alone. You know, enough's enough. I can't take so much heat at the same time. You have to understand that there's only so much with these challenging questions that I can handle. So you know what? You do one. Okay. Now there's another passage which I didn't put here in the Gemara in Pesachim. Okay, when the Gemara, the Talmud talks about, you know how we clean the house before Pesach, right before the holiday Passover. So the Gemara has a debate about what a person is supposed to do, whether it's on the 13th of Nisan or on the 14th of Nisan. The 14th of Nisan at night is when we clean the house officially. You know, we clean beforehand, but it's when we do the checking. And the question is whether we have to concern ourselves on the 13th of Nisan for a weasel. Now the Hebrew word for weasel, or the Aramaic word, is a chulda. And then the Gemara starts saying, well, if it's on the 13th of Nisan, then the weasel is not going to take any food because it knows that there's still chametz in the house. But if it's on the 14th of Nisan, then you have to think about it, and you have to be careful about it because it will recognize that there isn't chametz in the house, and it's going to start hiding chametz, so you have to be very careful. The Gemara says, "Hello, are you crazy?" And then the Gemara asks its joke. It says, "V'chi chulda neviahi? Is the weasel a prophetess?" And the joke is that there is one of the seven prophetesses in the Bible was Chulda, was a woman whose name was Chulda. So it's asking, is Chulda? Yes. You got it. Okay, you got it. Okay. Let's take a look at the next one. Okay, I'm going to cut to the chase here to make a long story short. Actually, you know, we'll just read it in English to make it short. Okay, they're teaching from the second verse in the first chapter of Tehillim, in the first chapter of the Psalms. His desires in the Torah of the Lord, ki im b'torat Hashem chefzo. Okay, it actually talks about how people who do not seek out the company of good people, and they do things which aren't growth oriented Torah wise. Okay, Rebbe said a person can learn Torah successfully only from the area that his heart desires. For the verse says, but his desire is in the Torah of the Lord. Levi and Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rebbe, sat before Rebbe and they were studying scripture. They concluded a book. Levi said, let Proverbs, the book of Mishlei, be brought to us. Rabbi Shimon compelled Levi and the book of Psalms was brought. He said, no, I want to learn Tehillim. I don't want to learn Mishlei. When they reached the verse, which was pretty quickly into their learning, because it's the second verse in the book of Psalms, but his desire is in the Torah of the Lord, Rebbe explained and said, you know, a person can only learn Torah from the area that his heart desires. See, you know, Levi is like the classic fifth grader. I caught the Rebbe! I caught what you said! You said I don't have to be here if I don't want to be here. Guess what? I didn't want to learn this stuff. I'm leaving. And he says, Rebbe, you have given me permission to leave. And he upped and left. Now, what is that? How does somebody go ahead and do that? Because, yes, he's intellectually honest, and because he uses Talmudic thinking to say, oh, I'm going to figure out exactly, you know, literally what the Rebbe said and the teacher said, that this is going to be the way it's going to be, and so he says, and he actually leaves, and that's what he does. How do you do that if you don't have a sense of humor? And the Rebbe agrees. He says, you know what? You caught me. You're right. You're right. Is it a joke? It's not a joke, haha joke, but it's banter. You said this, well, I've said this, and that is a form of humor. Look at the next case. The next case is the case in Baba Metzia. No, Baba Basra. Baba Basra. Where the Mishnah tells us the following. If a young dove or a fledgling was found within 50 cubits of a dove coat, harehu shabal shovach, it belongs to the owner of that dove coat. Chutz mi chamisha mama, but it's more than 50 cubits away, harehu shamotzeo, belongs to the person who found it. Nimtza bein shnei shovachot, if it's in between two, then you determine what it's closer to. Whichever one it's closer to, that's the one it belongs to. Okay. So the Talmud asks a few questions and tries to figure out exactly, you know, the nuances. Okay, now what would be perhaps the most annoying question that a person could think of? Okay, well, take a look at what Rabbi Yirmiyah asks. By Rabbi Yirmiyah asked, "Raglo achat betoch nun ama." If one of the bird's legs is within 50 cubits, v'raglo achat chutz mi-chamishim ama, and the other one is on the 50-yard line. One's on the one side of the 50-yard line, and the other one's on the other side of the 50-yard line. Mahu. Come on, Rebbe. Tell me, you have just taught this idea. What do you think? What do you think? V'alda afkuhu l'Rabbi Yirmiyah b'bei Midrasha. And because of this silly question, they threw him out of the study hall. Now, I, when I was in 12th grade, I asked my American history teacher, who was a very, just, you know, it's like a classic geek history teacher in high school, okay, who had this, who was very bright, he had a doctorate, I don't know what he was doing teaching in high school, he should have been in university somewhere, but whatever, I guess he enjoyed teaching high school, maybe he couldn't get a job, whatever, okay, but in any case, I said to him, I asked him, when Eleanor Roosevelt married FDR, did she keep her maiden name, or did she take on his name? Now, they were like third cousins or fourth cousins, something like that. They were cousins, and her name was Eleanor Roosevelt before they got married. And he looks at me and he says, "Mr. Billet, don't be facetious." Okay. Now, had he been working in this study hall, he would have thrown me out because I asked the same question. Okay, but on the subject of Roosevelt, I have another joke. There's this story which is told that, you know, one of those people who were off the boat in the 40s, they came off the boat and somebody asked them, this European Jew, who are you gonna vote for in the election? Okay, now you remember who the candidates were? It was Roosevelt, and on the other side it was Wendell Willkie. Okay, so he says, "I think I'm gonna vote for this guy Mendel Willkie." So he says, "There's no candidate Mendel Willkie." He says, "Oh, in that case, I'm going to vote for the Rosenfeld." that also goes back to the idea that the Jews always feel that they're the key, at least the image of the Eastern European Jew is the one who feels that we have a major impact. And I can't get out of my head this image of this woman who says that the Jews helped Roosevelt win. Why? Because she saw the headline in the newspaper that says, "Roosevelt elected by landslide." Landslide is Yiddish for me, all the people from the old country. Okay. Now, what do we know here? Why did they eject him from the Beit Midrash? The Rashi says, because he was bothering them. Because he was bothering them. So, what does it mean he was bothering them? There's a... I had it here. I'm forgetting what it was. There's a guy. He goes over to his psychologist, and he says to him, "Doctor, I'm really in trouble because I've discovered that I talk to myself." And the psychologist says to him, "Oh, don't worry. Many people do that." He says, "Yeah, but doctor, you don't realize how big of a nudnik I am." And that was the problem here with Rabbi Yirmiyah, and that's why he was thrown out of the basement. Okay, we'll do one more. And this is one of the most strange passages in all of the Talmud, as far as the extent that it goes to prove the point. But it also goes back to the idea of, you can call it Jewish guilt, or the idea that we want to prove that we're right, or if we're accused of something wrong, that we're going to set the record straight. And I promise you, this is a strange passage, and there are different interpretations to try to make it look not as strange as it is, and they're legitimate and fine, but you have to take the passage for what it says in the first case. Okay, we'll look at it in English in the interest of time. When Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon, would encounter each other, a pair of cattle could pass between them and not touch them. In other words, they were both so enormously fat that their bellies, you know, whatever it was, could fit two cows walking underneath their bellies. That's how big that they were. That's how big they were. A certain noble woman, now in the Gemara, it calls it a matronita, which could be also translated as a matron, told them, "Your children are not yours." In other words, because you're so huge, there's no way that you could have physical relations with your wives. And they said to her, Oh yeah? Well, guess what? Our wives' stomachs are even bigger than ours. Now, I don't know how that answers the accusation. But anyway, she says, all the more so. So some say they told her, "For as a man is, so is his might." In other words, when there's a will, there's a way. And some say they told her, "Love drives back the flesh," which is another way of saying, when there's a will, there's a way. Why did they answer her at all? Doesn't it say, this is a verse from Proverbs, from Mishlei, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly." They answered so as not to create rumors about their children. She was basically accusing their children of being bastards, and they didn't want that to happen. Rabbi Yochanan said, and now this is where it gets really crass, Rabbi Yishmael's organ was the size of a 9-kav canteen. Okay? Yes, his no. Rav Papa said Rabbi Yochanan's organ was the size of 5-kav canteen. And the point of this, by the way, is to show that even though their stomachs were so huge, like I said before, when there's a will, there's a way. And they go through this discussion. Now, what's the point of all this stuff? What's the point of all this stuff? I think that for the most part, the point is to show that, look, there's an accusation that's been made, and there's no way that you're going to be saying that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar's children were bastards, but look how far the Gemara has to take it in order to prove the point. Now, by the way, this idea of bantering with a matron is something which the Marx brothers capitalized on. As a matter of fact, their entire career was based on, was it Margaret Dumont, right? Who was the leading lady matron in all their films, who they would pull the wool over her eyes the entire time, and who they made a fool of in every, most notably Groucho, made a fool of in every single one of their films. But that, you know, where does that come from? I'm not going to say that Groucho opened up the Talmud and found this and said, "Oh, hey, what a great idea." But the idea of... Right, or the cigar. But the idea of bantering with a matronly woman at some point certainly begins in some way here. I mean, there are cases in the books of the prophets as well where something like this happens. But here we go. Okay. Now, when we talk about humor, when we talk about jokes, we also have to bear in mind. Somebody said this at the outset. Oh, Joey was telling me before that there's sometimes you have to be careful about how far you take a joke. Okay? And that is what this next source is about. Why did Rava call Rav Sheshet the child that debased the ways of his mother? Because Rav Achadvoy Bar Ami asked a question of Rav Sheshet, who responded 4 times, and Rav Achadvoy rejected each answer, and the way he responded was in a jesting manner, the way Rav Achadvoy responded. Rav Sheshet felt distressed, and because Rav Sheshet was greater, somehow Rav Achadvoy was punished, and he was struck dumb, and he forgot all of his learning. Rav Sheshet's mother came to him and cried before him. She cried and cried, saying, "Please, Rav Sheshet, it's because of you that this other rabbi is injured or is ill. Do something." He paid no attention. She said to him, "You see these breasts of mine that you suckled from as a child? In other words, because of what I did for you when you were a child, I'm asking you to do me a favor in return." And whereupon he prayed for mercy on Rav Achadvoy, who was healed. But the point of the story is not so much Rav Sheshet, who perhaps was in the right or whatnot, but the degree that Rav Achadvoy took it in terms of the way he treated Rav Sheshet. Yeah, you want to make a joke, you want to respond once, that's fine. But if you're going to do it so much at a person's expense, that's not the type of humor which is appropriate. It's not the type of humor which we want. It's not the type of humor which is appreciated. And by the way, Jack Benny, who we'll talk about in a couple weeks, the way he created his entire mode of humor was he created a character called Jack Benny, who was self-deprecating and who was the butt of all the jokes, but it was all about his character. Nobody else was a loser. Nobody else was somebody who would be knocked down. And that's why his show was, in the span of 15 years, I believe it was on the top in the ratings, 3 out of those 15 years. And in the time when there were just a ton of radio programs, and some of them, including Amos and Andy, which was the top, and the Bergen and Charlie McCarthy show, were at the top. The fact that he was up there 3, if not 4 times in 15 years was a phenomenal feat. All right, let's move on to retorts and one-liners. I had a lot of more jokes which I was going to tell, but in the interest of time, we won't do all of them. But this is the story of Rabbah and Reb Zeira, who had a Purim meal together. Okay, this is a tale which talks about how far does a person have to go on Purim in terms of getting drunk. And what happened, well, let's read it. They got drunk, Rabbah got up and he slaughtered Reb Zeira. Okay, that seems kind of cool, doesn't it? But in any case, the next day he begged for mercy and Reb Zeira lived. The following year, Rabbah said, "Hey, let's you and I get together again for Purim meal. I had such a good time last year. Let's do it again." And Reb Zeira's like, "Well, you had a nice time. You may recall that my throat was slit, and I don't really want to do that again." So there you have a classic case of a one-liner retort where he says, not every time will a miracle happen. Now, perhaps he's doing it nicely, but the point is, no thank you, Charlie, I am not interested. Next, when Rebbe died, humility and fear of sin disappeared. Rav Yosef said to the Tana who made that statement, "What do you mean? Humility did not disappear, for I am still alive." Now, there are different ways of interpreting that as well, but the point that he's making, and you know, humility doesn't necessarily mean I'm humble. Humility could mean I'm not a person who seeks glory and who seeks covet. You know, I'm just a guy. You know, people say I'm a humble Jew, right? When you say you're humble, I'm a humble person. Nobody says, "Oh, you're so arrogant by saying that." They understand that you're not seeking laurels. Okay, fine. But the point is, the way that he says it, he's like, "What do you mean, humility? Hello? And it's comical. It's comical in that sense. Just a few one-liners. I got to do it. There's this couple, this husband and wife. The wife says to the husband, "Close the window. It's cold outside." And he says, "And if I close the window, it's going to be warm outside." That's number one. This guy goes to the post office, and he says, and the lady says, "I'm sorry, you're going to have to put more stamps on here. This thing is too heavy." And he says, "And if I put more stamps on, it's going to become lighter." You get that idea? One more. This guy comes along to his friend and says, "Hey, you borrowed my pot, and it's broken, and you got to pay for it." And the guy says, "First of all, when I gave it back to you, it was new. Second of all, when you gave it to me, it was broken. And third of all, I never borrowed your lousy pot in the first place." These are, you know, the classic jokes. Okay, we're not going to get into Talmudic logic. Yeah, I had a lot of good lines, but I do want to end with one joke here, and that is the modern day responsa, which I got in an email, and I thought it was just the headline was, "Who says rabbis don't have a sense of humor?" And it was all in Hebrew. But look at the last one on the. We'll look at it on the English side. The guy says, "Some mornings I rush to work and I drive 130 kilometers per hour and over the white line. Do I need to say Hagomel every Monday and Thursday or save them all for the Sabbath?" And what's the answer? "I wouldn't worry about that. It's better that you teach your children to say the mourner's Kaddish." Okay, the rest of these, of course, are also very funny, and I encourage you to read them, you can keep this handout if you like. Okay, this is our introduction. We're not going to be going through Talmudic passages in the future. I gave you a flavor of the Jack Benny and of the Marx Brothers. We will talk about those. We'll spend 1 week talking about comic books, and especially Superman and their creators who were Jewish, and in general, Jewish themes in comic books. And we'll talk about themes of jokes, and how Jewish people sociologically created jokes and responded with jokes, and just used the sense of humor and wit to, in times of despair and in times of what's the word when they were oppressed, to not only get by, but to be able to rise up and to flourish, and more than survive, but to thrive. Thank you.